For a lot of artists, one of the big challenges of aging is to keep coming up with new ideas and to hold on to the sense of amazement about the world. Betty Woodman began her career studying the craft of pottery, but she had a big creative insight that inspired her to turn that craft into an art.
The usual way of working with clay is you make parts and then you assemble them. So you make a cup and you make a handle and you put the handle on the cup. Well, maybe I won't put the handle on the cup. I'll put the handle on the wall. I didn't arrive at this by thinking about it. I arrived at it by observing it. And I don't know how to articulate this very well. I was thinking about it the other day, listening to a solo violin partita of Bach. You're not really worrying about how the violinist knows where to put his fingers. You're listening to the music and what it is. It's just what I'm doing. All those tens of thousands of pots that I made, looking at a lot of work in museums. Everything I look at becomes something in my head. Using that experience, I make a lot of work, and one piece comes from the next, to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. I'm Betty Woodman, and I'm an artist. This is a diptych, and it's a piece I did last summer. I think when I did it, I thought, "Wow, this is the best thing I've ever made." I think I'm fatuously pleased with myself and my work. I think I accept my work. But what I don't want to do is just, repeat it. And in a way, does the world want you to do that? You know, I mean, at times I've made something that, everybody wants. I made an object called a pillow pitcher. And so I said, hey, I'm not going to have any in my next show. I was at the beginning of my New York art career. I was with Max Protech, and he said, well, can I have one in the back room? And I said, yeah, sure, you can. The show had been up a few days, and I got a phone call saying, we haven't sold anything. Is it all right if I put your pillow pitcher out? 5 minutes later, he saw that. So what do I do in my studio? I can go in my studio, but, how do I know what to do? I start by repeating myself. And in the midst of repeating myself, I have new ideas, if I'm lucky. It interests me, and I think it always has interested me. I think it interested me to make dinner plates and to make cups and cookie jars. It's like a problem to solve. It's difficult, it's painful, it's very tense. I don't think it gets easier. I think if it reaches the point of being easier, there's no point in doing it.
So there's a good piece of advice for an artist of any age. Keep the work ethic going. But for some people, the advice is just the opposite. Don't let a work ethic interfere with making art.
Bohemians do not shave very often. They work irregularly and don't really fit in anywhere. And while it's a pretty good thing, there's a place where all the outsiders can go and be inside, like the village here. It's a tragic thing when the sons and daughters of respectable families cast aside years of careful breeding to come here to chase...
Most of the Beat generation eventually straightened up and got real jobs. But there are always holdouts, and hardly anybody has held out longer than Taylor Mead. An actor who was already 40 when he plunged into Andy Warhol's downtown art scene, and whom I remember as a wacky fixture downtown when I got to New York 30 years ago.
I'm Taylor Mead. You can Google me. I'm the biggest thing on the internet, below 14th Street. I've made 130-some movies. I'm extremely semi-famous. Very good painter, drawer. I'm almost abstract. Oh, not really. Well, I'm 84 f***ing years old. And I always wrote. Bowery Poetry Club. You can catch me there. I improvise. I don't never come prepared. I just get stoned and get up and do it. And I play Charlie Mingus music to crazy poetry. Lick his asshole, suck his nipples, around it, so on and so on. It has a wonderful rhythm to it. I like everything I do. I like all the movies I've been in.
I'm not Carson of a Parish. I'm an aging rock star from the 60s.
As an actor, I would have been the biggest thing in Hollywood or Broadway, and my acting teacher said so. I won an OB in Leroy Jones and Frank O'Hara, two great playwrights. They buried the fucking play that I won an award for. We only had three or four performances, and then they double-sold tickets. And I went, rather than kill them or shoot myself, I went to Europe for 3 years. Well, I hitchhiked to California 1 year, and someone broke into my apartment, left the door open, so the fire inspector saw all this paintings and writings all over my place. And then the super, who I thought was a friend of mine, he threw everything out. Destroyed two or three books that I was completing. So, you know, that just ended the so-called writing for me. I never sit down to write. That was in the 50s.
Did you ever try to recreate it or anything?
No. I don't plan anything. I'm totally out of it. So now I just do hit and miss poetry. I never change a word. If it doesn't come spontaneously, forget it. If it's not easy, don't do it. I inherited money. I always survive. Otherwise, I'm incapable of working. I'm still living like I have servants. I still eat in bed. A typical day is I watch TV all day. Take a Vicodin and stay home. I'm like a drug addict. My parents did not believe in me. My mother didn't come to a triumph I did at Grosse Pointe High School. And then my father was living elsewhere. They were totally indifferent. I was brought up by maids. What made me recover is I found a 21-year-old friend, top student at NYU, hanging in his room. That kept me alive. That'll do it. This is 1950s. We're at a rooming house on West 69th Street. And the night before, he's telling me about his new boyfriend, who's a Spanish Puerto Rican doctor or something. He said, "Oh, Taylor, I'm going to get out of this rooming house, and we're going to live together forever." I said, "Dwayne, this is New York. You're lucky if it lasts 2 weeks." And the next day, I came out of my room down the hall. He left his door partly open, and I thought he was standing in the corner of the room. He'd hung himself on a gas pipe.
Why?
His lover didn't show up.
Were you closeted back then?
Never. When I was four, I was in love with the boys next door. Rich people do whatever they want to. I have so many epitaphs for me. Like, one is, "I'm too sophisticated to die." Dewar's whiskey, that helps. Vicodin helps. You need pills to get through this life.
Taylor Mead performs every week at the Bowery Poetry Club on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. You can also see a video of him at studio360.org. Jonathan Mitchell produced our story. And that is it for this week's show. Thanks very much for listening, and I hope you listen again next week. Studio 360 is produced by PRI, Public Radio International, and WNYC. Our production team includes
Julie Burstein, Lital Mulad,
David Krasnow,
Michelle Siegel,
Derek John,
Jenny Lawton,
Pike Medinowski,
Alana Harper,
Rob Weisberg,
Kurt Schlachter,
Josie Holtzman,
Nick Haling.
Special thanks this week to Klaus Andreasen, Tommy Tropotis, and Matthew Kavnar. Our theme music is by David Van Tiegum.
PRI's Studio 360 is funded in part by Ken and Lucy Lehman, who believe that winning workplaces respect, reward, and invest in their employees, by the Lilly Auchincloss Foundation, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art.
PRI, Public Radio International.